Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, January 14th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me. As one guest joins me for the full program today, that is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll talk NFL playoffs, we'll talk NHL, we'll talk golf with the American Express this week, one of the most unique events on the PGA Tour, so you definitely want to stick it out for that. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Well, not this morning, because we're having some site issues, and we are down over there working on it. We're going to get back on track, back online there with everything. So once we are back, we'll have a lot of great content for you here for the NFL playoffs for this weekend, as well as everything going on in the NHL, college basketball, NBA, golf, soccer, tennis, you name it, we got it over at the website. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and we start with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
All right, bud. The home stretch. We got 3 football games left.
Yes, sir. 3 football games left. College football crossed off the page now, at least until April or so, when season win totals and games of the year come out. But yeah, the NFL, the only game in town here. I guess we'll finish up on the college football side real quickly, put a bow on the season, as I like to do with all of my guests here, Brian. I ask all of my guests, you know, as you look back through your college football season, what worked for you? What didn't work for you? What may you look to change or sort of reevaluate as we head on into the next season?
Oh, I, you know what, just another year, Adam. The bottom line is, I think I do this in all sports, college hoops too. I think maybe you get a good read on a conference, and maybe a handful of teams that you have a really good read on, and then by extension, because of the cycle of games they play, it leads you to some other teams in some conferences. So I wouldn't say anything, you know, specific, but I do, you know, when I latch onto a team or two, it usually bleeds out into the conference and you find opportunities as a result there.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And again, for a lot of our listeners out there that, you know, maybe can't watch a lot of games, maybe can't handicap all 50 games on a college football Saturday, something like that. Conference specialization does make a lot of sense. It's certainly not a bad idea. Become an expert in that conference. Generally speaking, one of the group of five is probably a little bit better in college football just because there's a little bit less information out there about those teams. But again, conference specialization, a great idea in college basketball as well as college football. And you know, again, like I said, season win totals, not that far away. So if you become an expert in a certain conference, you can look at recruiting rankings. You can realize which returning production is going to be there and get ready to hit some of those numbers once they pop up. We transition over to the NFL side of things here, Brian. And as always, we take a look back before we take a look ahead. Looking back at the divisional round, pretty surprising result there with Baltimore, of course. Otherwise, the higher seeds holding serve.
You know, I would say this. Surprising, maybe the level of dominance you saw there. But, you know, bud, we've been doing this podcast now all year. And this Tennessee team's the real McCoy, buddy. I mean, Henry is an absolute tank. And he gets chunk plays on the ground. And he wears teams down. And their play-action game, I mean, they just ran the ball down New England's throat when New England said, we're taking the wide receiver away and we'll stop Henry. And they couldn't stop Henry. You know, and Tannehill is playing at a very high level. These guys are no joke. You know, this is the real McCoy. Now, Kansas City asleep at the switch in the first half, and then they turn it up and go nuts. So that, you know, impressive in that regard. But Kansas City is not a team that really is adept at stopping the run. I thought that total should have been 54 looking ahead. I can't see anything but points galore unless the weather doesn't cooperate. But don't sleep on Tennessee. This is no joke.
Well, I'll just sort of run through my quick thoughts here on all 4 of the games for the divisional round, and then we'll sort of apply those to this conference championship round here. You know, I had a listener reach out and thank me mentioning the 49ers in that early bye week for them. And defensively, I mean, they were as stout as they could possibly be in that game against Minnesota. Great adjustments made at halftime as well, pitching the second half shutout. You know, they take that 14-10 lead into the break. They do what they need to do. All of a sudden, they win that game 27-10. And that defense did look a lot better. And yeah, Cousins was 21 of 29, but he also got sacked six times. He was harassed most of the game. San Francisco just bouncing back really, really nicely with that bye week, and something that, you know, certainly did help them, particularly on the defensive side. You know, the Titans-Ravens game is very interesting to me because we know that the playoff betting markets are shaped by recency bias. They're shaped by narrative, this and that. I mean, let's be honest here. I know Tennessee won that game. I know that Tennessee had a big lead throughout the second half. I know that Baltimore was playing with a little bit more tempo, throwing the football a lot. But Baltimore almost doubled up Tennessee in first downs, had 230 more yards, ran 39 more plays. And I get it. You know, they had 5.8 to 5.7 yards per play, largely because Baltimore was throwing it more. But Baltimore, four trips into the red zone, only one touchdown, minus three in turnovers. I'll give you a chance to respond here, but I think Tennessee is being a little bit overvalued for that performance. I know Derrick Henry was really good, but Baltimore got into Tennessee territory on, what, eight or nine different occasions, stalled out on downs four times, had the three turnovers. That game could have gone a lot differently than it did.
Yeah, I don't know, buddy. I'm a believer in what I'm seeing from Tennessee. And, you know, Lamar Jackson, you know, ends up with 143 yards rushing in that game. What, 80 of them? 90 of them were at the end when they were playing two deep zone and playing clock. They had an answer for Lamar Jackson's scrambling ability. That's Mahomes' game too. Now, I think it's safe to say Kansas City's got a lot more weapons that he can target downfield. I think they'd spend the better part of the week trying to figure out, and Vrabel comes from the Belichick tree, a way to take Kelce away. So maybe Kansas City has some big plays over the top with Hill and Watkins. I'm just, listen, Kansas City is not that good stopping the run. That to me, Tennessee is going to run the football. I mean, and they're going to be in this game. Let me say this to you. Let me give you an option. Tennessee can win a low scoring game and Tennessee can win a high scoring game. I don't know that the Chiefs can win a low scoring game. I think Tennessee has more versatility. I really do.
I mean, I think that's a little bit difficult to say. I mean, obviously, Kansas City coming off the shelf with the bye, they had some special teams mistakes in the first quarter of that game against Houston. After that, Houston scored 10 points. So the Chiefs did really buckle down. I know Deshaun Watson wound up having a whole bunch of yards, did make some throws over the course of that game. But the Chiefs really did buckle down after they kind of got shell-shocked a little bit there in the first quarter. Now, of course, you could say that, you know, Houston, collectively, their heads were kind of spinning based on what was going on, kind of took them out of their rhythm. But, you know, again, Bill O'Brien settles for that field goal, doesn't go for the fourth and one, and that game completely changes. Kansas City goes on that 41-0 run. I think Kansas City can win a lower-scoring game if they have to. I don't think if they want to. You know, certainly I think they'd prefer to score a lot of points and, you know, win any way possible. But, you know, I do think that they do have the opportunity to win a lower scoring game. And look, we're talking about, what, 96 carries now for Derrick Henry over the last 2 weeks. We're talking about a Titans defense that was on the field for 92 plays last week, playing their third straight road game. And again, a team that, you know, they're several weeks removed from the bye week now. That worries me for the Titans here in this spot. They keep riding these emotional highs. And I wonder here if they can't play from in front and all of a sudden Ryan Tannehill has to show up and do something, what does that do to them? I think that's the kind of the key factor for me here in this championship game.
Well, I don't think Tennessee would pack it in the way Houston did. And I would go back, honestly, I would look at, what is it, week five. And here's the model. Here's the model for Tennessee coming in here. And they've got the weapons downfield that Indy didn't. But if you remember that 19-13 win, when Indy went into Kansas City And, you know, Marlon Mack ran it right down their throat with 29 carries, 132 yards. And the bottom line is, you know, the best defense for Mahomes is don't let him be on the field. And I'm a big believer in Tennessee. I really am. Now, the other side of the coin, I got to give, you know, San Francisco a boatload of credit. And the key to that game was how impressive their defense was. Now, the way I played the Packers game, and I think we talked about this on the podcast last week, I don't know what it is about Green Bay, but whatever they do at the beginning of games with their scripted plays flat out works. They've been doing this all year long. I played Green Bay -3, and I was a big chicken at halftime and didn't play Seattle coming back. But that's Green Bay's MO, is to get off to a fast start. I'll be doing the same thing this week. I'll be taking Green Bay in the 4 in the first half. But I, at the end of the day, I kind of like San Francisco. But I've got to give kudos to Green Bay that they are prepped and ready to go with their scripted series at the beginnings of games.
Well, and that's another thing, too. You know, again, we talk about just the narrative and how a lot of these games are viewed. You know, Tennessee, again, very impressive from a final score standpoint. But Baltimore did move the football. Again, we're -3 in turnovers. So, you know, how do you sort of evaluate that? We just talked about the 49ers and how to evaluate their performance. I think Green Bay is a really interesting one because they're up 21-3 at halftime. They outgained Seattle on a yards per play standpoint very, very impressively in the first half of that game. Trying to find the numbers here. I did write it up in my preview over at bangthebook.com. 5.9 yards per play in the first half for the Packers, 5 yards per play for Seattle. So that was every bit of a 21-3 game. Now you ask yourself, is Green Bay a little bit disrespected because that became a 28-23 game? Because if Pete Carroll doesn't punt it away, maybe Seattle finds a way to go down there and figure out a way to win the game. Or should we only be looking at the first half for Green Bay and say, well, they put it on ice in the second half. They kind of stopped playing. And that's a theme throughout the NFL playoffs, throughout every sport. I don't know why, for the life of me, these coaches go into a shell. Do what you did to get the big lead. Don't play not to lose. Keep playing to win. Did Green Bay fall victim to that last week? Or was the first half an aberration and the second half is maybe more of what Green Bay actually is?
Well, I mean, the Bills had a 16-0 lead. I mean, but they should have been playing last weekend. I mean, that they all do it. It's insane. But Green Bay is a creature of habit. I mean, this has gone on all year long. They start fast. Then they start playing clock and get conservative. And then, you know, Rodgers can come up with the big play when they need it to get a first down and ice the game. But I will tell you this, forget the punt. The play that Seattle was winning that football game. If Malik Turner doesn't drop a 20-yard pass on first down, Seattle was going right down the field and going to get the lead in that game. The Seattle had all the momentum. That one play just derailed the whole thing. But Green Bay, listen, Green Bay starts fast. They start fast every game. Now, the key for San Francisco, you know, they got a three-headed running back monster. I mean, you could say all three of those guys are number one running backs in the NFL on any team. So, you know, the running game's going to be critical. Does Garoppolo make a big mistake along the way? But the San Francisco defense, what was ridiculously impressive to me, I mean, they just took Cook out of that game. And Cousins had no shot. No one was open, and he was under duress. Now, Rodgers is a lot more mobile than Cousins. And I think if Green Bay does what they normally do, there's a chance Green Bay plays with the lead in this game, which makes it a lot more interesting in the second half.
Well, and I think there are a few really big questions about this game. In fact, I think this is the tougher of the two handicaps. I do like Kansas City a little bit in the AFC game. But here in this NFC game, you know, Rodgers is more mobile. That's absolutely correct. But Rodgers also, there's just something missing this year. I don't know if it's the lack of wide receiver talent that he has. I mean, Devontae Adams with a massive game against Seattle, accounting for 160 of the 243 actual passing yards for Aaron Rodgers. So does he have a second weapon in this game that he can go to? And another question for Green Bay here, the running game. Aaron Jones wasn't very good. 3 yards per carry, had the long of 23 that made up 23 of his 62 yards. Did have a couple rushing touchdowns, but you know, he wasn't exactly effective. Now, of course, Green Bay in the second half playing very, very conservatively. Seattle may be taking advantage of that. Can Green Bay actually move the football on San Francisco? And if they can't, Green Bay just gave up 23 points to Seattle, a Seattle team led by Brian Schottenheimer as the offensive coordinator, who is one of the worst play callers in the NFL. I mean, this guy doesn't get it. Russell Wilson bails him out. Kyle Shanahan's a hell of a lot better. One of my favorite play callers and play designers in the NFL. I think Green Bay has got a lot of worrisome trends here going into this game. And I don't mean betting trends like, you know, their last 10 games. I mean, just overall what they do schematically, I don't think it lines up particularly well for them here against the 49ers.
All right. You talk about being disrespected. I think Green Bay is the definition of this. And we talked about it last week. 14-3 now. They're winning. You know, we're used to Rodgers slinging it all over creation and great game, exciting game, and they get knocked out of the playoffs. I was late to the party. You know, I remember in the summer months saying, boy, they did nothing to help Rodgers. And then, you know, dope. Yeah, they did. They spent the whole offseason addressing the defense. And for the first time in forever, he's got a running game. Okay, they didn't have a great running attack against Seattle last week. But they win football games. We're not seeing Rodgers throw the ball 45 times anymore. They've got a model that is winning football games. And coming in, that's the weirdest, quietest 13-3 team I've ever seen. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're winning football games, Adam. The model's working.
Yeah, I just – the problem is here, you know, once you get to the playoffs and you're playing against elite-level competition, at least elite in a relative sense in the NFL – does that work? I mean, is that a fallback that you want to go with here? I think Seattle was just more deeply flawed than Green Bay. I think that's why Green Bay was able to hang on in advance. And again, like you said, you know, a drop here, a terrible spot call here. This one potentially goes a lot differently, and we get San Francisco, Seattle part three. Instead, we do get Green Bay here in this game. And I'll say this. I mean, okay, Green Bay is finding ways to win. Fully get it, fully understand it. There's also going to be that question out there in the marketplace this week of, we saw these two teams play in the regular season. Does the second meeting go any differently?
Maybe not, but, you know, what's the game you want to win, this one or the previous one? And, could it be the same thing? Yeah, I guess. But still, at the end of the day, you know, you're sitting there saying, and I get it, San Fran's had this incredible season. But don't forget, you know, they gave up 46 to New Orleans in a goofball track meet game. They found ways to win, too. You know, they win the monsoon game against the Redskins. There have been some games where they haven't been this pretty, and I'm not knocking them. They've had a great season, and I'm beyond impressed the way the defense played against Minnesota. But, I mean, you're giving me Aaron Rodgers against Jimmy Garoppolo. I like my chances.
Yeah, that's a big question mark here, too. I mean, Garoppolo, of course, winning his first start, but, you know, he wasn't great in that game against Minnesota by any means. He didn't have to be. But by the way here, San Francisco up to 7.5 market-wide, total of 45. Kansas City, 7.5 market-wide as well. Total 52.5, at least as far as the offshore markets go. Can't believe we went about 17 minutes talking about those games without even throwing out the spreads for them. But
the two games, I would say this, Jay. My approach coming in is I'm taking Green Bay +4 in the first half. And unless the weather's ridiculous, I think the total in the Tennessee-Kansas City game is low. They put up 28 points, Tennessee did, at Baltimore. And Kansas City's run defense is not as good as Baltimore's. Tennessee is going to produce. Tennessee clearly did their part, and Baltimore came up short. Kansas City, it's a video game offense. This is going to be a goofball game. I think this game's in the 30s, and I think it's going to be wildly entertaining. But I think this game, of the two games, the over in the Tennessee-Kansas City game, I just don't see how it stays under. I don't.
Yeah, I agree with the over here. I mean, that's what I wound up playing. I kind of put my tail between my legs in the preview and just kind of went with the over as opposed to taking a position on the side here. Again, I do like Kansas City a little bit, but in the first meeting, and again, that first meeting had a lot of layers to it because the Chiefs really stepped up with Matt Moore. They played quite well. The defense kind of showed up a little bit more. That was sort of a little bit of a turning point for the defense at that point in time when Mahomes went out. But in that Week 10 game, it was Mahomes' first game back. And the defense really relaxed and kind of said, okay, well, we've got our offense back now. And then they wind up giving up that late field goal, lose that game at home. Kansas City did outgain Tennessee 530 to 371 in that one. But Tennessee ran for 225 yards, which was a season high on that Chiefs defense. Kansas City allowed 8.65 yards per carry in that game. Tennessee blitzed Mahomes a lot with questions about his mobility. Mahomes threw for 446 yards. So you kind of wonder here what adjustments both of these teams make and if they're even enough to slow down these two offenses. Well, because, again, Tennessee will be able to run, and Kansas City moves it against everybody.
Well, I would say this. I don't care what adjustments Kansas City makes. I don't see them slowing Henry down. And you got to give Tennessee a lot of credit. I mean, the only other game I remember Lamar Jackson struggling like that during the year, and they won the game on the road, was Buffalo contained Lamar Jackson, the game in Orchard Park. Other than that, Jackson ran around like a reindeer, and he found guys open downfield. But I think Tennessee's defense has stepped it up, too. I just don't see any way Kansas City stops Derrick Henry. He is just going to run the ball down their throat. That is not going to – I think that's almost a given. You know, Mahomes throwing for 446. Could it happen? I'll say this to you. If Mahomes throws for four – if you tell me, do you like your chances better, you know, with Henry being a monster – or Mahomes throwing for 446, I like Henry's chances better. Because you know him, buddy, a lot of times, you know, somebody's out there throwing for a gazillion yards. Some of the best fantasy quarterbacks that are out there are on bad teams because they're behind all the time and doing nothing but throwing. Kansas City is one-dimensional. Tennessee is not.
Well, I would counter that we don't know. I mean, Ryan Tannehill played very well in the regular season, but we haven't seen him. He's thrown, what, 25 passes in the playoffs?
He hasn't had to.
No, I understand he hasn't had to, but at the same time, look at what happened here. Not San Francisco was the exception. Well, I guess Green Bay played pretty well in the first half, too. But Baltimore and Kansas City both looked really bad in the first quarter. You know, and those are two teams that, you know, Kansas City in particular, a lot of drops, a lot of timing issues. You know, 3 weeks off for Baltimore, essentially. If Tannehill, who really hasn't had to throw a meaningful pass since week 17, has to actually do that in this game, can you trust him to do that?
Yes. This entire season, he's been unbelievably accurate. And one of the key plays in the New England game, were you want to give the ball back to Tom Brady at the end of the game? No. And he makes the play of the game. He throws like a 16-yard cross or an out pass across the field and threaded the needle. I mean, he's been ridiculously accurate, and he makes plays with his feet. I'm still befuddled by how good he's been, but at some point you just got to give the guy credit. Tannehill's been spectacular. They have not needed him in these first two games. I believe they're going to need him in this game. They could beat New England, who had a flawed offense, and basically they throttled Lamar Jackson and kept him off the field by controlling the ball on the ground with Henry. I don't see Kansas City slowing them down. I think Tennessee's offense is going to produce again. And, you know, I don't know, one turnover here or there. These guys got a real shot, bud. I swear to you. They're the real deal, and they've won me over in a big way. I've watched them all year long. Say what you want about fantasy football. I got Derrick Henry on a fantasy team, and he cost me winning the title because they sat him in week 16. But I watched them all year long, and that offense is the real McCoy. It is no joke. The best wide receiver in football the second half of the season is the A.J. Brown kid. And they haven't even needed him the first 2 weeks of the playoffs. Watch what he does this week.
Well, a couple of different points here. The first is that now that both of these games are at 7.5, everybody's going to have a 6-point teaser on San Francisco and Kansas City. So that's going to be
something. And you know one of them's going down, right? I mean, towers are going up. They're not coming down with these books. The minute Tennessee beat the Ravens, that was a winning weekend for the house.
It was a massive game for the house. I mean, they've talked about it. It was one of the best single game results for them ever, with Tennessee knocking off Baltimore. But that being said, and we could even draw a parallel to last night's game between Clemson and LSU. Clemson was a 1-point favorite, according to most people, going into a hypothetical national championship game before the semifinals. As it turned out, LSU was just the real deal. I mean, they just were. Trevor Lawrence didn't look very good. There were a lot of things that kind of went wrong for Clemson in that game. They gave up 45 points, and Dabo's lack of aggression early on in the game, which didn't cost him against Ohio State, wound up costing him in that game there against LSU. But a lot of the talk and a lot of the reason why sharp bettors, and I'm not a sharp bettor, but I was on Clemson in that game, was because all of us thought, okay, this line is over-adjusted. This should have been Clemson -1. It winds up being Clemson +5.5. Something is wrong here. I'm taking this perceived line value on Clemson. And we all know how that turned out. Tennessee and Kansas City here. And I kind of thought about this. I was sort of cycling this through my mind. Tennessee was getting 10 on the closing number last week against Baltimore. Now they're in a third straight road game situation against the Kansas City team that just hung 50 points on an opponent and looked really good for the last three quarters of that game. Doesn't 7.5 look low here? I mean, is the difference between Kansas City and Baltimore that big, or are we just reacting to what Tennessee has done, and that's why this number is adjusted? To me, I think this should be 8.5 or 9. I don't think Kansas City's that far off from Baltimore, but here it is at 7.5. And again, not key numbers or anything like that, but is this Tennessee respect? Is it too much respect? Is it Kansas City being that much different from Baltimore? From a line value standpoint, that's kind of the question rolling through my mind.
Yeah, no, I thought the number should be 8, and I thought the total was low. I thought the total should have been 53.5, 54. That's where, to me, if I'm going to poke holes at the number, it's the total. I don't know. I guess it doesn't have to be a love fest. I think we agree to disagree. I'm all in on Tennessee. I think this team is playing at a ridiculously high level. All the things you say, yeah, they're on the road throughout three straight weeks, but I cannot see Kansas City stopping Derrick Henry. In the playoffs, let's cut to the chase. I know it's a different era, but what wins championships? I mean, it's run and stop the run. You've got to be able to run the ball. You've got to be able to run the ball in the playoffs. You have to. And, the better running game, it's not even close, is Tennessee. And, the other game, you would think it's advantage San Fran, and I love the way their defense is playing. And it's not going to be if Green Bay wins that game on the road, it's going to be because Green Bay runs the football, not because Aaron Rodgers is slinging it all over the place. At some point, yeah, the three-ring circus offense can get you here, but can it win? Look at last year. Go to the Super Bowl last year. The Rams couldn't get out of their own way in the big game. An offense was going up and down the field, putting up 50 points all year long. They couldn't get a first down in the Super Bowl. The game's tightened up, man. It's all about running the ball and defense.
Well, and that's another interesting thing about this Green Bay-San Francisco line. And obviously, we're talking about so many angles about these games. There's just not a whole lot to talk about here this week. But dude, that line was 6.5. San Francisco -6.5 against Minnesota last week on the open, got bet up to 7 and stayed there. This one now goes to 7.5 based on some of that early sharp money that's out there. I feel like that is telling in and of itself, because keep in mind, Green Bay won the division, as you said, went 13-3, beat Minnesota twice in the regular season. Neither one of those games were all that great of looks for Minnesota either. And this one opens 7, like last week's probably should have, now goes up to 7.5. Is that the indicator here for us that San Francisco, is the sharp, respected side? And is that enough for us to take it? That's kind of, again, You can go over so many angles with these games because there's only two of them. But again, just looking purely at the line and the philosophy behind the line, the fact that this didn't open 6.5, it opened 7 when last week's had to be bet to 7, kind of tells me what I need to know about the perception of this game.
All right. Well, okay, but on the other side, the coin of money's coming on Tennessee. But the Green Bay-San Francisco thing, it is nothing more than a function of what did you last witness? And that was San Francisco terrorizing Cousins and easily controlling that game, winning for fun. And the last thing you saw was Green Bay wearing a diaper trying to hold off Seattle. I mean, the number is clearly a function of, you know, if Green Bay, you know, would have won that game going away, if they'd have kept doing, you know, they haven't done it all year long. But if Green Bay wins that game, you know, 35-14 or 35-17, this number is 6.5. This is clearly just a function of what people last saw, including the odds makers.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I mean, Green Bay, 5.9 yards per play in the first half last week, Seattle, 5. You know, I mean, do we punish Green Bay for sitting on that lead and sitting on that game? It seems like maybe the market is doing that here.
But yeah, in some respects, maybe we're not, but maybe we're overthinking this. And again, you know, like I said last week, I said, all I know is Green Bay, whatever they work on game plan wise and the things they do, and I believe me, I laid the 3 in the first half. To me, it was like a key play in the game when they took the opening kickoff. Because believe me, I wanted them with the ball, and they went right down the field. Whatever they work on during the week with their scripted first 2-3 series, it works. Then you get to halftime, the other team's making adjustments, and maybe to a degree, Green Bay gets a tad conservative, and they start playing not to lose and burning clock instead of continuing to do the things they work. But that has worked all year long. I mean, they are basically, I keep drawing this analogy, when Jameis Winston played at Florida State, they were asleep at the switch to start games. You faded them in the first half. After week 4, it was like they've done this every week. They did it the rest of the season. They were asleep in the first half and come roaring back in the second half. You faded them in the first half. You played them in the second half. That's what Green Bay's done from day one this year, the majority of their games. I don't see any reason for it to change.
Well, obviously, next week we'll be able to take a look at the early Super Bowl line, break that down side and total. Maybe we'll have we won't have too many props, I don't think, by Tuesday, but we'll be able to talk about the big game. And go ahead.
I will say this, that in that game, I didn't think it'd be the cupcake it turned out being. The other thing I played was Kelce over 73.5 yards. And, you know, that was ridiculous. He was just a matchup nightmare. I think they're going to dial something up. They're going to double Kelce. I mean, they're going to have to double Kelce and take their chances. You know, they'll probably get scalded. That's why I like the over, because I think Kansas City will get a play over the top to Hill. I think Watkins is stepping up and the speed that Kansas City has, I think they're going to move the football. But if they can take Kelce away, or really slow him down, they are going to force a mistake or two. And ultimately, I think Kansas City might get the quick strike a couple of times. But over the course of 60 minutes, I'll take the running game that Kansas City can't stop. So I'd be looking for maybe a guy. This week I'd shift gears from a prop perspective and maybe look at a Tyreek Hill. Because if they're hell-bent to take away Kelce, then, you know, Hill's going to be running around by himself.
Well, I mean, maybe this is one of those things where you want to use Damian Williams a lot, you know, sort of put Damian Williams into that James White type of role if you're Andy Reid here and kind of use him, especially if safety or linebacker helps coming on Kelce, then that gives you an opportunity to get some open field with Damian Williams. So maybe that's a prop that kind of makes sense there for that Tennessee-Kansas City game. You know, but again, it's one of those things where we're going to talk about the Super Bowl next week. We'll give you some thoughts on the early line, kind of break some of that stuff down. And of course, you know, we'll do as much as we can to get a lot of information out there for Super Bowl 54 here coming up in Miami. But let's talk some NHL here for today, Brian. And in fact, we've got the NHL All-Star break. I believe that starts a week from Thursday, I want to say. So we've got a nice little push here where I think a lot of these teams are going to try and bank points before they get those 4 days off. So we talk a lot about the situational spots. I think a lot of the extreme ones will still be there, but you know, some of these teams, particularly the teams in contention, I think they're going to really try to go balls out over the next week and a half.
Well, the next 2.5 weeks are going to determine who the buyers and sellers are. And then the other thing you got to take a look at are, I'll give you a perfect example. Two teams I watch, you know, religiously, Vegas and Buffalo are playing today. You know, Vegas is in a bad snap. They had a 7-game homestand. Now they're out of here. Their next home game's not till February 8th. It's ridiculous. They play a 4-game Eastern road swing, all-star break, their break, and then they go back east for 4 more. So the homestand, a 7-game homestand, they were racking up points, and then all of a sudden it just was too long. You know, they're around here, get out on the road, you know, do some bonding, play some simpler hockey. But why we love hockey so much, you know, the numbers. You know, Vegas in the last three games of their the homestand, they trailed 3-0, 3-0, and 4-0 after the first period in three consecutive games. They got booed off the ice in the game against the Kings after the first period. So what do? They come up, they're playing Columbus. Now, I don't care who you are. Yeah, it's been a problem. They're squeezing the stick. They made Columbus plus $1.75 in the first period, and Columbus had a 1-0 lead in the last game at that homestand. Now Vegas is, you know, hell bent to try to get off to better starts. They're betting them like the game's over tonight. They're up to $1.65. So you know, you'd be getting Buffalo plus $1.30 in the first period in Vegas. I mean, you would think that's a focus, is to get off to a good start. But I'm telling you, man, you got to look at schedules, and you know, Buffalo's fallen off the map. But all of a sudden now they've got a bevy. The European trip messed them up, right? But now they're playing weaker competition in the next bit with a boatload of home games, to the point where even though they're massively underachieving, there's a scheduling opportunity for the Sabres to actually make some noise. And if you looked at their record, bud. And you could go around the league and you could identify a lot of teams where this is the case. But, you know, when you look at the standings and you see Buffalo's record, and they're sitting here 20-19-7. All right. It's nothing special, a game over 500. But they're 13-6-3 at home. So they've been very, very good at home. And oh, by the way, they are 0-4 against Tampa, 0-3 against Boston, and split with St. Louis. And if you said arguably those are three of the very best teams in the league, if you took those seven games out of the equation, then Buffalo's record is 20-12-7. They just got murdered by you know, the three best teams in the league. But against the rest of the league, you know, this team's not a dog breakfast, and they're catching a plus price like that at home.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point to make. You know, we talk about strength of schedule. We've talked about it a lot in the context of college basketball. And, you know, sometimes you get four games against really premier opponents. You don't look very good. Sort of shapes that narrative a little bit. For Buffalo, like you said, I mean, against teams on their level or worse than them, they've pretty much taken care of business and have been a pretty good bet to make. Against teams better than them, well, they've struggled. And it makes sense. I mean, they're not deep on defense. Their goaltending is a little bit hit or miss. It's hard to have a lot of, you know, lacking areas when you play better teams in the league. You can overcome that against teams on your level.
Oh, by the way, Hutton has lost 11 in a row, the backup. And he played in one of the games in Europe in the back-to-back. But of the games I mentioned, if you took him at, you know, when Olmark's been playing and they're not playing those three specific teams, you know, they're in there with more than a puncher's chance. I'm not saying in here, Vegas is desperate. I think Vegas wants to get a long road trip off to a good start. But, you know, that's the one thing you get around here is, come on. I mean, the way they're playing and that line moves 25, 30 cents to the visitor. I don't know. It's like blind faith. I mean, people around here are like, oh, you can't boo them. Like, what do you mean you can't boo them? The coach was booing them. What do you mean you can't boo them? If you're going to stand there with pom-poms, you know, when you're getting rolled in your own building by one of the worst teams in the league, well, and if you're going to just sit there and blindly cheer for them, then that's going to become the norm around here. Well, nobody cares. You know, it's unbelievable to me. It's nuts. But that, you know, there's a lot of games on the card tonight. Jersey, Toronto, you got Morgan Riley out. First of all, Toronto's defense is a disaster. Now Morgan Riley's out. Gusev's playing better for Jersey. I don't know. How do you step up to the plate? Let me ask you this. It doesn't mean the game's going to go over the total. But would you ever, Adam, if I said, you tell me when, would you play Toronto Would you play a Toronto game under the total?
No, especially not about Riley. No way.
No, the total 6.5. It should be 7.
Yeah, well, maybe it's gonna get that way. I guess we'll kind of see what happens here with the betting action throughout the day. Pretty interesting one down in Tampa Bay here, Los Angeles and Tampa Bay. The Kings, we talk a lot about the moms and dads trips here on the show. The Kings are doing a quick 2-game dads trip in the middle of a longer road trip. This is really rare, really unique. We generally don't see this. We kind of try to look for the dads trip where it's 2 road games together, day off in between. Oh, it's probably going to be one where the dads are going to be there. Here, Los Angeles using the dads on what? Games 2 and 3 of the road trip, which is kind of interesting. But Tampa Bay here, and I pointed this out in my situational article, this is a 5-8 tonight. They play a 6-10 on Thursday and a 7-11 on Friday at Winnipeg. So I'm going to fade Tampa Bay on Friday, playing 7 games in 11 days. But they're a little bit gassed, and the Kings maybe a little bit jacked up for tonight.
Yeah, but believe me, I love the dad's trip. I mean, that'd be a grenade. It could go off. Can it go off? Sure. The only other time I remember somebody meeting the dads, and it wasn't the dads, it was the Leafs moms a couple years ago, where they flew the Leafs moms into the middle of a road trip. So that's got to be what the Kings are doing here and giving them that Florida weekend. So it's a little odd dynamic. I don't know that, if it skews the results, but the dad's trip's been working really well. I mean, Calgary went 2-0 on theirs. The Sabres start theirs this week. They're Thursday and Saturday at Dallas, at Nashville. The Blues will be coming to Vegas on February 13th. I think they play Anaheim, then Vegas. So there's still some left. And again, it's another year of this thing just reaping ridiculous results.
I'll tell you one other game that's kind of on my radar tonight. I'm not sure your take on it, but Boston at Columbus. Columbus, first game back after a long trip. We know what that spot means. That one's been very profitable, actually, this year to fade teams in that first game back. Boston is in a back-to-back, and they did go to overtime last night. But I think the nature of how they lost and how they've been a running joke, kind of with Marchand just completely whiffing on the shootout chance, not even being able to pick the puck up, kind of like Boston a little bit tonight, largely because of that Columbus angle. But also, Columbus just playing so well with a patchwork lineup, a patchwork goaltending situation. I sort of feel like they're kind of in for a letdown here.
By the way, we just started a new thing, if I could. It's called the Hockey Betting Podcast. You follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing. We tweet them out. We do it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I do it with my buddy Cam Stewart, who's up in Toronto. It's at betchriscanada.net. And we've been having great fun with it. And that first game home from a long road trip has just been a gold mine angle. But the funny thing is, we discussed this game yesterday. I would actually say back-to-back games are completely different when you're talking about a team like Boston. Because on back-to-back nights, you're talking Rask to Halak or Halak to Rask. It's a big difference when you're not really rolling a backup goalie out there. You're rolling a 1A out there. So I'm with you. And I think Boston, after blowing that lead, I think they'll have a little stone in their shoe.
All right, one more item of business to take care of here on today's show. And that's the used to be the Desert Classic, used to be the Career Builder Challenge. Now it's the American Express out in California. This is a very unique event, a very difficult handicap. You've got to do a lot of research to figure out when guys are playing on which courses here, because 3 different courses are in play: PGA West Stadium Course, PGA West Course, and the La Quinta Country Club. Ricky Fowler, your favorite, 11-1. Sung J M, 13-1. Bunch of guys in the 20, 25, 30 range. Let's start with this handicap here. I mean, 3 different courses, 54-hole cut. There's a bunch of different stuff going on. Celebrities all over the place, stuff like that. How do you handicap this thing?
Yeah, you don't. And I'm telling you, you know me in golf, man. I love it. This last weekend, crazy finish. Cam Smith gets the win. I was knee deep in that one. Most of the weekend had Sabatini, Zach Johnson, and then in play on Saturday morning, bet Kevin Kisner 40-1, and he got into the final group, and he just never got hot on the final round. But this tournament, it's amazing. Of all the stops on the PGA Tour, I am so indifferent to this. I hate this tournament. There's nothing about it I like. The winning score last year was 25 under. That's low. You know, usually it's like 27. It's a putting tournament. It's a goofball tournament. You know, I make a couple of small plays, and then if I'm in contention, I'll watch it. But literally, you are throwing darts here. I'm swinging for the moon with two small plays. I take a Taylor Gooch at 110-1. And this is the kind of tournament where, you know, some guy gets red hot and he's a birdie machine. You know, they honestly, he's kind of like, he's just like an ATM machine. He's the new version of Charlie Hoffman, but every blue moon he gets in there. I take a swing at a guy like Kevin Streelman, who's at a ridiculous price. He's in excess of 100-1, too, I believe. But beyond that, not for me, bud. I swear to you, it's a goofball tournament. It is what it is. I'll take a little flyer. Honestly, the one I'd be more inclined to play is the Abu Dhabi, the European event, where this is the real McCoy, and you've got you know, a world-class field over there as the European Tour gets started. And I'd be looking, you know, Keimer's 45-1 every blue moon, but he shows up and plays great in Dubai. Fleetwood's the 9-1 favorite. But I'll give you a guy, and for them, this is kind of like the, you know, the Tournament of Champions where all these guys are coming off the shelf. This is the case here where a lot of these guys, they didn't go over to Australia. They've been on the shelf working on their game, and who did good work to come out of the gate remains to be seen. But it didn't end well last year for Matt Wallace, but the year prior, he won three times on the European Tour. I'd like to believe the last 2 months this guy's been working on his game, and Matt Wallace at 55-1 is an overlay to me. I'm going to play Matt Wallace in Abu Dhabi.
Well, we'll definitely have a lot more golf to talk about here next week. And, of course, as we go through on the golf season here with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. You already mentioned the hockey betting podcast that you do. What about your two shows for KSHP?
Yep, noon to 2 Pacific. We get all the top sportsbook directors in Vegas on a daily basis. We you know, love the stable of guys we get on that side of the counter. Today, I think we'll get Tony Neville from Treasure Island, and Tony Miller from the Golden Nugget will be on. Vegas Hockey Hotline, if you're a hockey fan, honestly, I'm really proud of it because, you know, we have a great guest on a regular basis. Yesterday, we had the beat reporter for the Sabres, Mike Harrington, on for the hour from Buffalo, previewing the Golden Knights game. Today, the Golden Knights beat writer, Dave Shane from the RJ, the Review Journal, he's going to join us today with our buddy Stevie Slapshot. And it's Golden Knights centric, but there's a lot of talk about what goes around the league and sports and Vegas and hockey betting, excuse me. So that's a fun show. That's 1-2 Pacific, and you can get them at kshp.com. It's got the listen live function, and all the shows are archived at my website, sportsbookradio.com. And we got videos for you, my friend.
That's what I was going to say. You got videos coming up here for the two conference championship games, and I don't know, whatever else your heart desires to post over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. Once again, that's Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, kshp.com, sportsbookradio.com, and at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, bud. Listen, I love this. Always enjoy doing this with you on Tuesdays, and your show's terrific throughout the course of the week. Love doing it with you.
Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate that. And again, Brian Blessing, at Brian Blessing on Twitter, kshp.com for Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat some college basketball with Greg Peterson of the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast and also contributor to VSiN. And another VSiN contributor, Wes Reynolds, will join us to break down the NFL playoffs here for this weekend. And we'll also get his thoughts on the American Express, that PGA Tour event here for this week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.